Community calendar for Thursday, January 5th. President Bush has made the second of what could be as many as 4 nominations to the Supreme Court. The Oregon Coalition for a Fair and Independent Judiciary is having a discussion about how a confirmation of Judge Samuel Alito to the U.S. Supreme Court could impact Oregon and the things that we care about. Speakers will cover an overview of the U.S. Supreme Court and its future impact on issues such as separation of church and state, equality for women and minorities, the right to unionize, and privacy. This event will take place at the Independent Order Odd Fellows Hall located at 223 Southwest 2nd Street in Corvallis. It will begin at 7 p.m. on January 5th, and for more info, call 503-789-8213. There will be a Vision Project Community Grant Workshop held by the City of Portland on Thursday, January 5th. The City of Portland is requesting proposals to initiate outreach as part of the Community Vision Project. Grant awards range from $1,000 to $15,000. This event will be from 3 to 5 p.m. at the North Portland Library located at 516 North Killingsworth. Please RSVP to Amanda Rose by email at amandar@ci.portland.or.us. The first annual Northwest Indian Storytelling Festival will take place January 5th through January 7th. All events will be held at the Native American Student and Community Center on the corner of Southwest Broadway and Jackson in downtown Portland. The first night will be from 7 to 9 p.m. and feature 3 storytellers. This event is being hosted by the Northwest Indian Storytellers Association, which was formed in 2005 to encourage, preserve, and strengthen traditional storytelling among the tribes in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. For more info, call 503-777-7140. Thank you for tuning in to the KBOO Community Calendar for Thursday, January 5th. You're listening to KBOO in Corvallis, Hood River, and Portland.
KBOO Radio has a one-year full-time position available for a training systems developer. This person will develop an in-house training system for ongoing training of paid staff and volunteers in the use of all aspects of studio equipment, field equipment, and computer software editing. To select and train staff and volunteers to be future trainers, to manage and monitor this system, to update training materials, and to establish protocols for evaluating a training system. For application instructions and forms, please go to www.kbu.fm or contact KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, 97214. Applications must be received by Friday, January 6th. KBOO is an equal opportunity employer. KBOO is looking for a full-time finance coordinator to manage and account for KBOO's finances. We're looking for someone with experience in budgets, insurance, doing an annual audit, and human resources. Experience with grants and government reporting is helpful. For application instructions and forms, please go to www.kbu.fm or write KBOO for an application at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, 97214. For more information, please call the station manager at 231-8032. Applications must be received by Friday, January the 6th. KBOO is an equal opportunity employer.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Cotton Cloud Futons, a locally owned business featuring futons and mattresses, frames, covers, furnishings, and accessories which can be made with organic and recycled materials. Cotton Cloud is located at 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland. Information at 503-335-0758 or cottoncloudfutons.com.
Good morning. This is Joanne Bowman, and you are listening to Voices from the Edge. Today, I have a guest co-host, Dave Mazza, who is not new to you guys out in the listening audience. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, welcome, Joanne.
It's a pleasure to be here with you today. This is going to be fun.
It's an honor filling Alan's shoes.
Well, hopefully he's on the road having a nice mellow trip to Tennessee.
Down to the farm.
Today, for the first half of the program, we're going to be talking to a gentleman named Graham Covington, who has done some intensive research on cell phones and automobiles. And so we're going to be talking about, and I bet some of you calling in, please, whatever you do, don't tell Graham that you're calling from your car to participate in this conversation. Give you a warning now. But this is a topic I know that's near and dear to a lot of people, because anytime I mention getting a near misses on the road, I hear constantly from people about their own experiences with cell phones. So that's what we're going to talk about this morning. But as always, you know, callers are the boss of this show. So you call in and you tell us what you want to talk about. And the number to call is 503-231-8187. So welcome, gentlemen. And let's just jump right into the first topic this morning. Well, tell me, good morning, Graham. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm well. Thank you, Joanne.
Excellent.
Thank you, Dave.
Hey, Graham.
It is our pleasure to have you here. Tell us why you got involved in this issue.
I worked for Boise Cascade for 33 years, retired in January. And while at Boise, in 2002 approximately, we started to note that there was a number of pieces of research that were intended to focus on the hazards of cell phones while driving. Mm-hmm. At Boise Cascade, our number one value was safety. Mm-hmm. So we perked up, paid a little attention to it, and on the basis of the research back then, 2002, we made a corporate-wide decision to ban the use of handheld or hands-free cell phones amongst our sales and marketing and manufacturing organizations. So we imposed this ban on an employee base of about 20,000 folks.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily because we were unwilling to expose ourselves to the risk that they would be injured. Somewhat selfishly, my concern was I wasn't willing to take the 3 a.m. phone call from somebody who said that a family was no longer had a father or a mother.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you it was unpopular in the beginning, but our argument was to them, if they needed to make a call while in their car, they needed to pull over and make the call.
Mm-hmm. 503-231-8187 is the number to call.
We all have, you know, these horror stories of seeing, and it seems like nowadays it's even more ubiquitous. Every time you look up and see a passing car, someone's got the cell phone to their ear. Has there been any documentation about, you know, how many people are on the cell phone while driving?
Yes. There are a number of research studies that the listeners, if they have a specific interest, can access through Google. The National Highway Safety Transportation Association would be probably the most prominent, but there have been a number of studies run. And a couple of facts. There are today 173 million cell phone users in the United States. Now, in the old days, the population in the United States used to be 200 million.
Mm-hmm.
So from an age standpoint, a number of those are teenagers with cell phones. 85% of cell phone use occurs while driving.
Wow.
So, whoa.
we all have them, but the data is that 85% of the time that they are in use while you're in your car. It can make some sense, because most people view their drive time as dead time, mm-hmm. as downtime. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to be more productive. As we all know, technology is driving us as a society. And so the problem is becoming compounded, because now cell phones not only have video technology. So can you imagine the further distractions of a cell phone, not only cognitively while you're talking, but now visually?
And we seem to have come quite a ways from the days when there are vast dead zones out there on the highway where you couldn't use your cell phone. I mean, it seems like you can be in the most remote corner of the state now and be able to be chatting away.
Well, there are still pockets of mountains and what have you that will deaden out as you drive through them. But basically, I think we're an equal opportunity cell phone country.
Well, and you raise a good point. I mean, when you think about young people driving, we already know that the statistics on young people getting into accidents is significantly higher than for, should I say, mature populations like ourselves.
Thank you for that kind description.
And just the idea of thinking, you know, a young person is just very confident, overconfident, I would even say, and their ability to react to whatever the situations are on the road. So you can just imagine adding to that mix a cell phone. Because I know I have passed people, and it's always the person that's going 10 miles under the speed limit in the fast lane, and they are totally engrossed in their conversation. And it looks like they're, like, kicked back on their couch. If it wasn't for the fact that the two-ton vehicle that they're driving is actually on the road, you would look at them and think, well, they're kicked back on their couch catching up. And so you've been actually to the city council. You did a presentation to the city council because you had a goal that you wanted the city council to take some kind of legislative action as it relates to cell phones in the city. What was that about?
Yes, that's right. About a month or so ago, I petitioned the city council asking them to ban the use of handheld and hands-free cell phones within the city limits immediately because of the accidents that were specifically attributable to cell phone use. The most egregious of which was an accident about a year ago when a semi-truck driver drove up the back of a consumer vehicle, immolating the passenger. When he got out, the driver said, "I was distracted by my cell phone." We all remember the person who drove off the Morrison Bridge about 4 months ago mm-hmm. into the water. Mm-hmm. She was on her cell phone. And most recently on the Canby-Hubbard corridor, a woman on her cell phone, crossed the median strip, head-on collision with the driver coming the other way, severely disfiguring the driver, such that the city of Canby is considering felony charges. So, in my judgment, the evidence of the data plus the anecdotal experience of the city of Portland would suggest that. To answer your question, what was that like? It was well-received. Lots of comments from the city council and acknowledgement that they're looking at this issue fairly seriously. Semicolon, however, comma.
Hang on. Don't make that point yet. We'll come back to that point. Let's take our first caller. Good morning, caller. Welcome to Cable.
Yeah, hello. The building I live in Southeast Portland has these cell phone towers on. I'll bet anything it's affecting my body health, whether I can prove it or anybody's body health in this building. But I can't prove it. Another thing, for years I've been walking as a pedestrian, crossing the street with a very short time we do get to cross. But anyway, these any of the drivers, I never know. I've been thinking for years. I don't know what their mental or emotional states are. And I think a lot of them see us pedestrians, like these electronic games that a lot of people play, as just inanimate objects to avoid or they want to get out of the way. They don't see us as a human being having any value. That's all I'm scared about. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your call this morning. 503-231-8187 is the number to call.
Can I react to that?
Absolutely.
Because there's data. The University of Utah in 2003 did a study in which they described the phenomenon that the woman who just called in mentioned mm-hmm. as inattention blindness. That drivers on a cell phone gaze, but they don't see. There's a case in Hawaii where a woman ran over a man in the crosswalk, did not see him. He's in front of her.
Right.
She's on the cell phone.
Right.
Just to make an additional point, there's some fairly serious potential civil liabilities. The state of Hawaii had to pay him $1.2 million out of the state budget to satisfy 20% of the civil punishment, which was around $7 million.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow. Dave, did you want to...
Well, I was just going to ask how many, what percentage of injuries that are related to cell phones are pedestrians? I mean, how much is that, and how much is vehicle-to-vehicle type of accidents?
I don't know this. It's a very good question, because one of the concerns on this whole issue is the assumption that accidents that are caused by cell phones are underreported. There's no requirement for the police, for example, to ask this question, although In January 1, the state of Oregon has passed a law which mandates that the police include some question about whether or not cell phones were involved in an accident.
So that's going to start showing up on the report, accident report form?
Yes.
Assuming they change the forms. I know that Senator Avell Gordley, for a lot of years, every legislative session, like clockwork, would submit a bill to ban cell phone use in automobiles. And I know she did it for at least 6 to 8 legislative sessions straight with absolutely no success. And you actually shocked me, which doesn't normally happen, that people are actually able to shock me about legislation, but you showed me legislation that said basically there's a prohibition against banning cell phone use by local municipalities.
Yes. After my meeting with the city council, I got an email, an elucidating email from the city attorney, who said somewhat sarcastically that I might be interested in knowing that the state of Oregon in 2001 passed a law making it illegal for any municipality in Oregon to restrict the use of cell phones while driving. Now, I don't know why our state representatives need to protect the special interests and trump the safety of the citizens to protect the use of cell phones while driving.
I think there's the sound of a cash register ringing. You might be involved in that answer.
You may have a response to that, huh? 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We are having a very lively conversation with Mr. Graham Covington about his desire to advocate at the city council level to ban cell phone use within the city of Portland limits. I mean, but let's talk about this, because actually your goal would be to have this be a statewide,
of course,
change a statewide law, right? But you started with your nearest, closest government, which was the city council.
Well, it's the way you eat an elephant, one bite at a time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're going to go back to the phone line. We got a couple of callers. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Appreciate your show, Joanne, and thanks, Tom and Mr. Covington. I have about 3.25 million paid commercial miles,
mm-hmm.
and some of those miles were done in vehicles with two-way radios. And I'm also familiar with cell phone in a vehicle. And I've also had some training and then proceeded to train paratransit drivers for senior services. And my opinion about just watching my own self and driving in a defensive mode at all times, I think that cell phone use of the vast majority of human beings is a dangerous sport. And so I would really hope that people can bring that up in a way that we could make some changes. People that operate, you know, certain equipment like maybe a police car or a fire truck or an ambulance or something can get specific training about using two-way communications while driving. But even then, it's a dangerous, dangerous sport. And I highly recommend against it.
Thank you so much. It's nothing like talking to someone who's a professional who's on the road. And I bet you've had a lot of experiences as someone who is on the road on a regular basis, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, it took probably 35 years to put on that many commercial miles.
Yeah, right.
I'm not really fully retired, and I still do some commercial driving, and I do my own personal driving. And I also know that, you know, aging factors and how we compensate for our ability to be defensive on the highways and roadways and driveways and parking lots, it is just amazing, because I can watch myself and determine when I'm distracted.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are driving around and they just get distracted and they don't have a damn clue.
Right.
And I shouldn't use swear words on the radio. Pardon me, FCC. So anyway, anything that can be done to, I mean, I don't know. Part of my opinion is quite sour and dour, and you give people toys and they're going to play with them. And I have had some very near collisions due to people being distracted by a cell phone. You know,
right.
I as a really watchful, I really watch my driving. That's kind of my daily meditation when I am on the road, is I watch myself and observe what's going on and have to try to make my driving habits conform to make up for other people's mistakes. And I'm distracted by a bird on the side of the road.
Right.
So when people get in cell phone conversations, depending on who they're talking to and what they're talking about, it can lead to serious mishaps. So you folks have a good day.
Well, thank you so much. I actually have a question to ask you before you hang up, if you don't mind.
Oh, yes.
So we've been talking about cell phones, but we also know that people do a lot of different things when they're in the automobile. And so I'm sure what we would hear from the cell phone industry is cell phones aren't the problem. It's people that are the problem. I know as someone who used to ride to Salem on a regular basis that I used to see people reading books, reading newspapers. Eating breakfast, putting on makeup, brushing their teeth. I mean, doing some really bizarre things that I actually thought people only did in the privacy of their home. But I've seen people do it on the road, on I-5, going at 65 to 70 miles an hour.
Yes, ma'am. So
as a professional driver, I'm sure you've shared that experience?
Yes, I have. And I will admit to, at times, when I was in a position of having to drive over the road constantly, you know, 6 days or 7 or 8 days at a time, there's places on Interstate 80 in Nebraska where I have brushed my teeth and changed my socks.
At the same time?
So you're one of those culprits as well.
Well, I'm saying I've done lots of different things on the road. You know, mm-hmm. I've driven a city bus and had a person with an epileptic seizure and had to deal with that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That can, you know, there's all different ways we can get our attention refocused from what we need to be doing.
Right.
At 60 miles an hour, things can happen so quick, you know, that it's not even 1 second.
Right.
You know, in a nanosecond, everything can turn to a blur. So, yeah, I have seen, there are things I won't say over the radio that I've seen going on on the highway.
I can imagine.
And the drivers are totally distracted. And the best I can say is that I have to watch myself.
Mm-hmm.
And observe myself, and then try to spread that out to my children and family members and the community around me of how dangerous a thing it is that we do whenever we hop in that digger and go digging around the world here, and then try to talk on cell phones and, you know, put on our makeup and check the fuel mileage in our Cadillac at an instant moment, you know.
Right.
So, but
well, thank you so much. We certainly appreciate your call today and you giving us your professional input into this topic.
All right. You folks have a nice day.
Thank you. You
Thank
too.
You.
Pray for peace.
Pray for peace,
we'll
yes.
I'd like to react to a couple of things that he mentioned. One is the aging, the instant aging that occurs. There are studies that when teenagers get in a vehicle and are talking on a cell phone, they behave in terms of reaction times like an 80-year-old person. That's the data. They've tested it in a couple of studies that I've read. Secondly, the average person's reaction time in stepping on the brake, if they're on a cell phone, is 17% slower, and their ability to get back to normal speed is 19% slower. Hmm. So the reaction times are significantly impaired by cell phone use. I would also note that he mentioned buses and what have you. He drove mm-hmm. a bus. There are six states now that have banned the use of cell phones by bus drivers. As far as teenage driving, there are 10 states that have banned the use of cell phones by teenagers in their first year after having gotten a license, arguing that they got enough to worry about. They don't need to worry about a cell phone.
You know, I noticed looking at this list you provided of states who have taken some sort of action, it seems to be that really is just the two areas that they've decided to do anything in terms of banning school bus drivers and new drivers, like new licensees. And
there are three states that have banned the use of handheld cell phones. They are Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, and the District of Columbia.
That's across the board.
Yes.
No...
Not hands-free, but hands-held. That's the approach. Never mind that the data would support that there's no difference in the cognitive distraction between whether or not it's hand-held.
It's in your hand or whether it's in a...
And the data is that the accidents that are occurring are not because you're actually dialing. Mm-hmm. It's because of where your mind is. And the study that I referenced earlier at the University of Utah would say that that's different than casual conversation. Mm-hmm. Joanne mentioned, well, people, you know, there are other distractions in the car. That's the argument that you get from the cell phone industry.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is just one more, but I argue to the city council, it's a false choice because cell phone use is so much more a factor than putting on your lipstick. It doesn't make sense to say, well, let's let that go because it's just one more in a potpourri of distractions in the car.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Joanne Bowman, and my guest co-host today is Dave Mazza. We are in the studio talking to Mr. Covington about banning the use of cell phones. First in Portland, then in the state of Oregon, and who knows, maybe all over the good old U.S. of A. We have many callers on the line, and let's get back to them. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, you know, I think it would be a really good step in the right direction if talk show hosts would refuse to take calls from callers who are driving while they're calling in. It really upsets me that KBOO doesn't do this.
That's a good idea.
I mean, you know, admittedly, people can lie. But, you know, you can easily tell when somebody's on their cell phone and then driving from the noise.
So what if they're actually sitting in a traffic jam? Is that okay?
Yeah, I think if they're really not moving, of course, you never know when you're going to start up again.
Right. Right. But I think you are raising a really good point. I mean, it's like we should be actually emulating the behavior that we're seeking.
Right. And I think, you know, I really think this should be a progressive issue, but it's not. Because one of the things that upsets me about the progressive community, and I am progressive myself, is that I don't see any difference between them and the most flaming right winger when it comes to the rights, the sacred rights of drivers. You know, I wish that I did, but another thing I just want to mention that I believe TriMet does have a policy against drivers using their cell phones, and I ride the bus a lot. I don't drive. I'll report a driver whenever I see him on their cell phone.
Excellent.
I think people should do that.
I think that's right. I mean, but you know, I see police officers riding around talking on their personal cell phones. So it's kind of like, so where do you start to try to correct this problem? Because I actually agree with Graham that as cell phones have proliferated, what you find is they're like just about in every single environment. I mean, I've been at funerals that had people's cell phones go off. You know, it's like the protocol or the common sense approach to when's appropriate. I mean, you know, we were kids, you know, you knew when it was appropriate to be on the phone and when it wasn't appropriate. But it seems like we just have no kind of boundaries nowadays.
Well, and it seems to me, too, that part of it goes to the way we market automobiles. I mean, instead of, you know, we certainly treat airplanes and boats and other types of vehicles differently.
Right.
We don't treat those as... You know, places where the primary thing is I'm driving this large piece of steel at high speed. Instead, it's a comfortable thing where I can have the kids watching movies and I can do this. It's almost like a home away from home.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think most people tend to view their vehicles that way. So why not be able to sit there like you would in your living room and talk on the phone? So I guess there is a little contributory responsibility there on behalf of, the broader society, the automobile industry, and what have you, in terms of how we're getting people to look at automobiles.
Yeah, actually, another issue of mine is automobile advertisements in general, that they do present the automobile as this romantic, you know, you're in control. You never see traffic
That's true.
That's because they're driving over those enormous mountain ranges.
Yeah, and actually, my son who lives in the San Francisco Bay Area says he's seen him filming those commercials, and they actually have a pickup truck in front of the car filming it, and they actually drive at really slow speeds, like 5 or 10 miles an hour, and then they speed it up to film when they show it.
I've always wondered about those commercials, too, especially the ones, if you drive this car, you'll have this gorgeous woman riding with you,
right.
You know? Interesting message. Thank you so much for your call this morning.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Graham, did you have any comments you wanted to make on the caller's comments?
No, I didn't know about TriMet, so that's encouraging to know. TriMet, therefore, would not be unlike many corporations around the country who have had to take this issue in-house, so to speak, and impose their own bans. The California Employers Association has asked private employers to impose cell phone bans for safety purposes. So there's data on that type of initiative. So whether the legislatures act or not, there are things that corporations can do. And, Dave, your point about individual behavior, individuals have responsibilities, too, to recognize that this kind of behavior is very unsafe. Many of us have anecdotal information about how discourteous our society is becoming.
Right,
was your point,
true.
Joanna? Uh-huh. People, cell phones going off in movies, in churches, wherever. As a society, it seems to me anyway, we're becoming more inconsiderate of each other's. Mm-hmm. And technology allows us to blur those boundaries, if you said.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But this is different. This is about public safety.
Mm-hmm.
So I argue, discourteous or not, safety trumps everything.
Good point. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for another great show.
You're welcome.
I'm like that previous caller. I drive for a living, and I have for decades. And it's pretty easy to spot cell phone users on the highway. Their bad driving is the first one. and it's easy to pick out. What the people usually do is erratic speed, and they'll lift up on the fuel pedal, or they'll kick her off the cruise control to they feel they have more control, and they'll be safer while they're talking on the phone, and then they're an encumbrance to everybody because you come up on them, and as you pass them, you can look down there and they're calling somebody on the phone. The other thing I see, another pattern that's sprung up since cell phone use has come more in use, is people parked on the shoulder. A lot more people parking on the shoulder, and they probably think that's the safe way to take or make a cell phone call, and it isn't. It's unsafe and it's illegal to be on the shoulder of the road there. It's called, you can be cited for non-emergency stopping, and they're just inches from the fog line.
Right.
And they can't wait to take an off-ramp to do it safely. There are a lot of more people parked along the shoulder.
That's a really good point. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
You too.
You've been listening to Voices from the Edge. I am Joanne Bowman. My esteemed guest co-host today is Dave Mazza. And we have a fabulous guest in the studio, Graham Covington, who has done intensive research on cell phone usage in automobiles. And so at a point later, I'm going to ask you what you want the listening audience to do to help have an impact on this issue. So don't let me forget to do that before we wrap this up. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
How are you?
Good morning.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. We can hear you now.
Good, good.
Are you on your cell phone?
actually, I am. I'm sitting on my cell phone in traffic over in Beaverton, result of an accident up ahead of me. Just as a point of information, I've been in the wireless industry for about 15 years now. And, you know, I think that the cause in search of a problem, being trained in statistics myself, I think that you can make these numbers say virtually whatever you want. However, I think the issue comes down to, as a number of people have said, personal responsibility, whether it's an issue driving a truck jacked up in the air 36 inches, listening rap music so loud it rattles the cars around you, or talking on a cell phone. I don't think the issue is an outright ban. I think it's education and enforcement. I would like to suggest perhaps a positive alternative, that accidents, in fact, do occur, that if it can be proven that the people who caused the accident were distracted by the use of a cell phone, that that carry a differential charge. Instead of a fine of $100, perhaps $200 or $500. And put that personal responsibility back on the individual, not on the collective, but on the individual who has caused the problem. I think that what your individual in the studio audience is talking about is punishing the multitude for the sins of the few. And what it reminds me so much of is the exact situation that we got into after 9/11, where the entire flying public had to bear the brunt of the failure of an existing law, existing policy, and an existing failure to enforce. And I see absolutely no difference between what he's proposing and the kind of broad brushstroke reactionary laws. And I'm saying that as a liberal and as a progressive, not as somebody from the right wing.
First, let me say thank you for calling. I appreciate having someone from the industry call, because I think it's important that we hear all sides of this issue. Because it is something that people feel passionately about. But let me ask you a question. So what do you think about new drivers having the ability to use their cell phones while they're just learning how to be new drivers?
I would agree completely, and I would agree because that's the way I was taught to drive. The first year or two that I was a licensed driver, I was not allowed to have other passengers in the car. I was not allowed to drive at certain hours. I see that being a positive reinforcement for a young driver who's just learning how to handle a car.
Okay, thank you. I got another couple of questions, because I'm just trying to see like where the tipping point is for you. So what if we created a 1-800 cell phone use number where people could call in to report unsafe drivers who they have visually seen using their cell phone and driving in an unsafe manner? And then if they did that, those people would automatically get a ticket. Would you support something like that?
Well, technologically, I don't think you can do that. I'm aware of the E911, which is the emergency triangulation system, how it operates,
right,
and its ability to target a specific user. Unfortunately, the technology, I don't believe, is there to do what you're suggesting, although...
Well, I don't know. We've got the technology now that a police officer doesn't have to be there to give you a ticket if you run a red light. So But they have a photo. Well, what if we did the same thing? So what if somebody, if you're driving, we've got cameras set up all around the city. I mean, it's like there's no such thing as privacy anymore. So what if, in fact, those red light running cameras were reprogrammed to actually send somebody a ticket for driving unsafely using their cell phone?
Well, I think that involves a very interesting computer algorithm. I'd like to have the patent on that one.
Hey, maybe I'm giving away some ideas that could help in my retirement. I don't know. There you go.
We'll all be funded through that one.
Yeah, well, let me give my co-host and our guests an opportunity to ask some questions as well.
I guess for me, the thing that we need to go back to, too, though, is, and I think we run into this whenever we talk about people's automobiles or their cell phones, which is, you know, the Constitution doesn't say that we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of cell phones and automobile usage. In fact, driving is a privilege that the state grants to us on the assumption that we are willing to abide by certain rules that will ensure the public safety. And it seems to me where we can produce a preponderance of evidence to show that that safety is put in hazard and by certain activities like cell phone use, I think the state has a responsibility to take action.
Well, let's broaden your statement, though. Let's not say cell phones are the only distraction that occurs.
I agree with that.
The Starbucks cup holder, the makeup, the children, the DVDs newspaper, in the car.
Right, the newspaper over there.
I mean, let's not single out one particular industry as being causative of a larger problem.
I'm in full agreement with you, because it goes back to my sense is that people have forgotten that when they get in that vehicle, they are, you know, powering a large piece of steel at high speed that has the potential to do incredible amounts of harm.
I wouldn't disagree with you at all, but I think that the problem is a larger problem, And I think it's not only a problem of education, it's a problem of enforcement of existing laws.
Mm-hmm.
We have enough laws on books now that talk about courteous, safe, accurate driving that go consistently unenforced every single day. And stylistically or philosophically, the addition of one more law to it, I don't think solves the problem. I think it is a sophistry that really accomplishes nothing.
Well, thank you. Graham, do you have any questions for this caller?
Not questions, but those are really good points, and I'm with you, Joanna. It's very helpful to hear the point of view on the so-called other side of the aisle. The only thing I would suggest is the following. The caller right now, I would encourage you to take a look at the Journal of Experimental Psychology report that you can find on Google entitled Cell Phone-Induced Failures of Visual Attention During Simulated Driving. I think you will find that there is a fairly persuasive body of data that decouples the notion that somehow these other distractions are the equivalent of cell phones, mm-hmm. and specifically points to cell phones as being one of the major contributors, second only to drunk driving, in terms of causing cognitive dissonance. Now, we're all different people. Some people have abilities to do multitasking, others don't. I recall last week an airline pilot saying, well, for the general public, yes, it should be banned. But for me, as a pilot, I'm used to
right.
multitasking all the time, so they should
sure.
let me to do it.
I can walk and talk and chew gum at
yeah.
the same time.
That would be.
I'll be happy to take a look at the article. Can you give me that citation again?
Yes, I can. It is.
I'm going to type it in my computer while I'm driving.
Good.
He's joking.
I'm just kidding.
No, you know, sadly, I believe you. It's the Journal of Experimental Psychology. It's applied psychology.
All right.
It's in the 2003 edition,
right.
Volume 9, Number 1, and the title of it is Cell Phone-Induced Failures.
All right.
Of Visual Attention During Simulated Driving.
Good. I'll take a look at it.
Yeah, check it out.
Thank
Appreciate
you so
thanks.
Much.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling.
Appreciate your call and your willingness to hang out with us for a little while.
All right.
Bye now. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on the Radio Zine, Marlene Howell will interview Portland independent filmmakers Chrissy Weslow and her husband, Chrissy Robley, about their recently completed film, What's the Matter, Girlie? It addresses women's experiences of menstruation and menopause. Okay. At 9:30, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, The News You're Not Supposed to Know. And at 10, it's part 4 of Will Seaman's series on Israel and Palestine. Here, guest Tanya Reinhart, professor at Tel Aviv University and the author of Israel-Palestine, How to End the 1948 War. At 10:30 on Art Focus, host Julie Bernard interviews local artist Daniel Duford about his Sleeping Giant at the Melhurst Art Gym. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, a look at the history of safety violations at the Sago mine, where 12 miners just died, in an interview with Rabbi Michael Lerner on the future of Israel. And tune in tonight at 5 for the KBOO Evening News. The second half of tonight's program will be a call-in show asking listeners what you would like to hear on the KBOO Evening News. That's what's coming up today, January 5th, on KBOO. Back to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO. Ooh, that sounds like a cell phone.
Static, yeah.
Hello, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello, and I will tell you,
you sound like a tunnel.
I am. Well, I'm kind of here in a little but I am on my cell phone, but I will tell you this. I am just walking all by myself in the small gym room.
Mm-hmm.
So no chance of collision.
Oh, good.
That's what my cell phone is. But I'm over here in Vantucky, and this then is not a toll call for me. I just use my minutes. So
oh,
that's
good.
Okay. And
all
I
right.
don't use my minutes.
So we're not costing you anything yet.
No. There's no cost here. But I would like to say that we talk about personal responsibility, and that's no longer in existence. And I would say that when I first really recognized how bad things were in this country was when Ronnie was our king, and everything was image with no substance.
Mm-hmm.
From then we have virtually no common courtesy, common decency, and we sure the hell don't have any common sense in this country anymore. And I do, when I'm a passenger in a car, I'm kind of a people watcher anyway, and I watch people driving, and so many on their cell phones, they aren't paying attention to anything, and they have this look on their face, they're packing an attitude. The cell phone is just a personal accessory for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a necessity. It's kind of like their automobile is not a necessity. You know, automobiles should be transportation.
Well,
but they've become personal accessories, and so has the little cell phone, because you can have different dresses for your to match your outfit.
That's true. You can get those little pockets that you can put your cell phone on your purse, so people will know you have a cell phone
exactly.
As compared to when you're using it.
Right.
It's very bizarre.
And you can match the cover to match your outfit.
That's true.
So, anyway.
All I want is a telephone to make a phone call on, and yet I'm confronted with having to make fashion statements.
Right.
But
the other side of that, quite frankly, is have you noticed how unaccessible a regular payphone is nowadays?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless you have a calling card, the average person has no ability, if you don't have a cell phone, to actually be able to make a phone call in any public environment. It's the most insane thing. You should have saw me trying to figure out how to use a payphone when my cell phone wasn't working somewhere. And you needed some advanced degrees to figure out how to actually make it work. Long distance, but thank you so much. We appreciate your call.
The better to surveil you, my dear. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Well, just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get me. I want to also mention some trainings that are coming up. Portland Cot Watch is doing orientation and trainings in the month of January. They're doing them on the 2nd, 4th, and 5th Mondays at 6 p.m. at the Community Language and Cultural Bank at Northeast Graham Street at Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, around the corner from Billy Reed's. January 9th will be the orientation. January 23rd, you're right in the police. And January 30th, cop watching. Reservations are required for all three workshops. There's a $10 fee that covers the cost of all three workshops, but no one will be turned away due to their inability to pay. If you need more information, you may contact CopWatch at 503-236-3065, or you can email them at trainings@portlandcopwatch.org to reserve a space and for more information. The other thing I want to say, Dave and I were talking before the show started, and the fact that Mayor Tom Potter has a charter review committee that has started mm-hmm. meeting to review Portland's charter, which has not been reviewed for over 50 years. I know that there are many, many, many of us in the local community that would love to see a independent police review committee. And I actually think that the more of us that show up at those public meetings and talk about that, the better off we're going to be about moving that issue forward to a vote of the people. And it could be done through the charter review process.
Yeah, I think that's a really important message to get out there, Joanne, because we all know it's the folks who sit through the whole meeting to the end that ends up getting their say.
That's right.
And it's the folks who are opposed to stricter citizen oversight who are doing that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to get out there. And I would encourage folks to participate in the cop watching trainings. They're really well done. They provide you with a wonderful set of tools. And anyone who's looked at today's paper knows we need more cop watching happening out there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Well, Graham, we thought we'd only be talking about this for about a half hour or so. And as you can see, you've got people all hot and bothered, and they're calling in, and they're telling us what's going on in their world. So if you want to join this conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. I'm talking to Mr. Graham Covington, who is advocating for a cell phone ban, at least starting in the city of Portland and working our way through the state and maybe more. We also have a guest co-host this morning, which is Dave Mazza, who's not a guest to you guys because you know Dave because he's always around.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, callers. Welcome to Cable.
Hey, it's me, Lisa Loving, the evening news director.
Hey, Lisa Loving.
Good morning.
Hey, Lisa.
Good morning.
This is a wonderful dialogue, and I just wanted to, again, encourage people to listen to the KBOO evening news because we're going to change things in this coming year, how we do our 5 o'clock news broadcast. But I want to say on this issue of cell phones, one of the biggest issues that's happening in our activist community right now is this issue of the phone tapping that the federal government, the National Security Administration, has been engaging in at George Bush's behest, which is arguably illegal. And we had last week a whole series about domestic surveillance, and we interviewed a variety of people on the local level about, you know, the history of domestic surveillance of local activists in Portland mm-hmm. and in our region. And there's quite a long history, a
yes,
decade-long history.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the points that local civil rights attorney Stuart Sugarman made is that when you're talking on a cell phone, when you're organizing a political activity, in fact, when you're doing anything at all, it's just like talking into a megaphone. As far as surveillance mm-hmm. goes, as far as local police or even federal government efforts to track what you are doing. And I know that's a little bit off topic for this discussion, but it's one of the most compelling issues that we're looking at in the news department. I just had to toss it into the mix.
No worry.
And see what Dave especially thought about that. Thanks a lot, you
guys. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
She's
Bye.
Just increased my paranoia quotient tenfold.
Well, and I mean, we do have a president that says, you know, he's just protecting us, and we don't need to know what he's listening to or why, but just trust him, right? He's protecting
exactly.
us. Back to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, last week I heard a caller talking about the IPR, and then I just heard you speaking about it again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you really need an IPR. American jurisprudence is a law book. 70 AMJUR 2D subsection 90 says any law enforcement official that misconstrues or misapplies the law to my harm is 100% liable in their private capacity. You have a good day.
You too.
Thank you.
I don't know what that statement was supposed to imply. Was it supposed to imply that we don't need to hold the police accountable for their behavior, or was it meant to imply that the law already allows for that to take place? What we know about the history of police accountability, at least in the Portland area, is that we have a long, continuous history of police not being held accountable for their interactions with community members. And if you think about it, I mean, police supposedly are well-trained, they are fully armed, they are controlled by a commander who is supposed to be able to see all sides of the issue before suggesting which direction that law enforcement person would be. But in addition to that, I mean, supposedly in the early 90s, we moved away from a police force that was mandated to control the community to one that was a partner with the community to try to make the community better. At least that's what we said on paper.
Right.
But the reality is that there is a underlying fear in many, many communities in the city that they don't trust the police. And they have very, very, very good reasons for not trusting police. Now, does that say every police officer in the city of Portland's police department is bad? No. In fact, you know, there are a lot of good police officers that work in the city of Portland. Do we have bad police officers? Yes, we do. We have also bad elected officials and bad bus drivers. But the difference in all those other fields is that those people are not issued a gun and do not have life and death control over every citizen that they interact with.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big difference. I have a higher expectation of how police should interact with citizens because I expect them to actually use their training to de-escalate and make interactions with community members a more positive experience. I mean, maybe I just have too higher expectations for what I expect public safety officers to do.
Well, I don't think you can have too high of expectations in that. I'm wondering if the caller was saying that we already have on the books the capacity to punish officers who do something that's out of sync with policy. I don't know if that's an accurate assessment or not on the whatever the citation was.
Either.
But I think the other important part of looking at any sort of civilian oversight, it's not just about having a big stick to hit the policeman over the head. It's about, I think, you know, integrating the police into the broader community.
Exactly.
And having the community really help shape the policies and the mindset of the Bureau, which obviously we're having a hard time doing now under the current system.
Exactly.
Since, you know, once again, we just see them retreat under the same old excuses when something happens like this incident in today's paper with the fellow shot in the car. Well, they're not sure if that lieutenant was aware of the new policy. Well, you know, that's like, well, the dog ate my homework. Come on, guys. You know, we've been down this road enough times. And if they don't know why, then why didn't his superior make sure he knew? And why isn't somebody getting fired for this?
Right. Well, and I think that's really the point. I mean, right now what we have, I remember that very long year that we spent reviewing police accountability stuff, reviewing the old PIAC, making recommendations to the mayor's office, the mayor totally ignoring the recommendation of the majority of her committee members and tasking Gary Blackmore, the auditor, to come up with a totally different system. The new system has been in place now for 2.5 years. There has been no city council oversight of this committee, even though when it was put in place, we were told that there would be an evaluation after 1 year. What we know is that really good people quit in frustration on this new system. What we know is that the new board has been hand-picked, so people that people thought would not be easy to get along with were automatically excluded from this new system. And so I'm just looking at this opportunity now that the mayor has a visioning process, a charter review process, and all these improvements that City Hall is looking to incorporate into a new city of Portland. We should not let this opportunity slide by without taking some real affirmative action to be sure that the issues that this community cares most about are addressed through these variety of processes. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of community meetings or going to meetings every night, even though I spend most of my life in meetings. I'm not a big fan of it, but I do think that when it's important, when it's an issue that impacts my life and my community, that it's the right thing for me to do to invest the time to be there and make sure that my voice is heard.
And when our elected officials look out at the crowds at these meetings and they're seeing people carrying this message that they don't see before,
yes,
it has so much more impact than saying, oh, there's Joanne, there's
right,
Dave,
right,
there's
right,
some,
right.
The
right.
same old usual suspects.
That's right.
So you need to get out there. You need to make your face shown and your message heard.
Yeah, and just a consistent message along the board. 503-231-8187, the number to call. We got a couple of callers. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. So my interpretation of that last caller, what they were saying is, they said that if you violated the law or the Constitution as a police officer, that you could be held privately responsible. So that tells me that he's saying that they're subject to civil suit or prosecution for for not abiding by the law.
Can you think of one case in all the time you lived in Oregon where a civilian has sued in civil court a police officer and been successful?
No, but, you know, nature abhors a vacuum, so maybe somebody will move in here and take Alan's place and follow his model and start suing the cops every time they turn around. And then the cops, because it costs money to defend yourself in a lawsuit, then the cops will, police union will advocate for an IPR. How's that for a rosy New Year's prognostication?
I don't know what you've been doing between now and then the New Year, but I tell you, I can't share your...
Unfortunately, nothing.
You might need that second cup of coffee by now, Paul.
I love your enthusiasm, your optimism, but
hey, you know, if you don't think about it, if you don't ask for it, you ain't never going to get it.
Now, that is a true statement, which is why Dave and I are both telling people any opportunity you have to have your voice heard around these issues, the mayor over the next 6 months is going to give you ample opportunity, and so take advantage of that opportunity.
So does that mean that Dave is going to be publishing when these meetings are going to be in the Portland Alliance, and you're going to be posting them on your show, you're telling people when?
Well, I will be telling people, but, you know, what I know about KBOO listeners is they're pretty computer savvy, so if they went to the mayor's webpage on Portland Online website, they could find more information than they care to know about those meetings. But as I hear about them, I will certainly be bringing them to my Thursday morning audience to make sure that I'm reminding people. You know me. I mean, I'm always nagging people, whether it's registering to vote or go to this meeting or that meeting. Did you really think I would, like, be quiet on this? No way.
Okay. Well, I know you won't now. So, hey, on the cell phone deal, you know, the Supreme Court 20, 25 years ago before cell phones came into prominence said that those little phones that you, wireless phones that you walk around your houses, that those are not privileged communication. So anytime you use a phone that doesn't have a wire connecting it to the wall, they get to listen to you and they get to use it in court. But that gentleman that from the cell phone industry reminded me of a nephew of mine who used to say that he didn't think people should be busted for drunken driving or this or that. He said, you should be busted for bad driving. I don't care if you're having a religious experience, if you're bad driving. And I think the man did have a point in that probably under the reckless driving statute that could apply. You know, I drove for years with a microphone in my hand. And I worked in Alaska. I drove cab, and I answered the phone and dispatched other cabs as I was driving through the snow. And so that meant I had to keep track of where people were going and where the trips were at and all this other stuff. And people did that there. Some people, you know, some people can and some people can't. People get in just as bad a wrecks with hands-free sets as if they have the thing on their, and I think it's, in a way, people just have to understand their personal limitations. If it's distracting, if you can't do it, then don't do it. But the lady that, called in reminded me of why I wanted to call in today is that there is an article in today's Wall Street Journal on the front page, and forgive me for butchering this because I'm paraphrasing. Alito in 86 apparently wrote a paper about the unitary powers of the presidency, and he is one of a group of people, apparently a subset within the Federalist Society that call themselves Unitarians, that think that the president has these Unitarian powers that most people would equate to the powers of a king. And part of one of the things that Bush has been doing, apparently on Alito's, or it might be,
I'm going to have to cut you off here.
Oh, but anyway, so he said that, when he signed the anti-torture bill, he put a signing statement on the end of that bill, and he's been doing this. And this is Bush creating his own presidential powers, that the anti-torture bill doesn't pertain to him when he's using his unitary powers of the presidency, and the judiciary doesn't have any powers to stop him. Yeah. So,
well, he's not the first president who thinks the office comes with a crown. Thanks, Paul.
Okay.
Appreciate the call. And speaking of Alito, there's actually a press conference next Monday at 12 noon for people who think that Alito would not be an appropriate addition to the U.S. Supreme Court. The press conference will be held at City Hall Chambers at 12 noon on Monday, January 9th. So if you'd like to come and stand in solidarity with folks who would prefer to have someone with more talent, then please feel free to come and join us at that time, 12 noon, at City Hall Chambers. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
How you doing? Wonderful. How about you?
Doing good.
Excellent.
I'm actually really glad I tuned in today.
Cool.
You guys are touching on two of my very favorite topics, cell phones and police accountability.
Hey, well, you know, you get Dave Mazza and you get Mr. Covington here. What do you expect?
Definitely. Well, I just had a couple things to put out there, kind of on the intersection of the two.
Okay.
First of all, just wanted to remind people some of the usefulness of cell phones in organizing. The bridge sit-in was all organized by text messages, if people recall.
Mm-hmm.
Then also the phone that I'm talking to on the cell phone actually has 1 hour of video on it, so that could be very useful in a cop watch situation.
True.
But another danger of using your cell phone in the car is a lot of times, actually in general, I mean, that's been one of the biggest excuses that I've heard of, you know, police shootings, saying, you know, oh, we thought they were reaching for something, it was a cell phone, so.
That's a really good point.
Those are a couple things on top of my head. I think you've kind of gone over the using the phone in the car issue. I tried calling in earlier about that. Just wanted to put out there that I really do echo the sentiment of the gentleman that put it back on personal responsibility. I mean, if I'm using my phone in my car and I need to merge lanes, or there's a situation in which the traffic is going to be, it's going to be too much for me to try to concentrate on more than one thing at once.
Right.
I don't even tell the person I'm on the phone with. I just put the phone down.
Right. Just hang it up, huh?
Well, maybe not hang it up, just put it down in my lap.
Right.
And also, you know, most cell phones that are coming out have Bluetooth technology these days, and the Bluetooth headsets, while they don't eliminate the distraction of having a conversation, they do entirely take away the aspect of losing, you know, one of your limbs to drive with.
Well, except, okay, now with the Bluetooth technology, not only can you make calls, but you can check your email from your cell phone while you're driving.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, definitely.
I want to challenge this personal responsibility. Now, I could be a really responsible driver, and
right.
I am driving the speed limit. I am using the road as appropriate. But surrounding me are people that are either going 10 miles under the speed limit or the other extreme, the ones 10 miles over the speed limit. They're not paying attention. They're weaving in and out of traffic. And once you get close enough to be able to see the driver, what the commonality is that they're talking on a cell phone.
Right.
Now, as a law-abiding citizen who has the right to use the roads to get where I need to go, why should I be hindered or why should I be harmed by someone who, in fact, is not following the rules? And so if I'm following the rules and everybody around me isn't, then either I get one or two responses. Either I'm like, I'm not going to follow the rules either,
mm-hmm.
or I'm like, I'm not going on the road. I mean, we had the woman call earlier that said that she's just afraid of driving on the road because of what she encounters. So I agree, personal responsibility goes to a certain degree, but at some point, if the people are not responsible, that's why we license automobiles. That's why we provide medical license to people who pretend to be doctors, right? That's why we give them license. If the government can step in and regulate what is supposedly common sense behavior because there's a greater public good, then shouldn't we be trying to make sure that the greater public good benefits all of us?
But you don't feel those systems are already in place?
Well, I mean, there are no rules. I've never, ever seen a cop give someone a ticket for going 10 miles under the speed limit on the freeway or anywhere else for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
Never. I've never seen that happen.
But there is a law. I mean, just because they haven't done it, there is a law against it.
Well, there is. There's a law that says that you shouldn't be impeding traffic, right? That you're supposed to go with the flow of traffic.
Right.
But if the flow of traffic is people going 10 miles under the speed limit because they're on their cell phone, then if I'm going 5 miles over the speed limit and not talking on my cell phone, who do you think is going to get the ticket? It's going to be me.
Well, I've never heard of any. I mean, normally you won't get a ticket unless you're going over 10 miles, you know, over the speed limit, 10 miles an hour.
Well, yeah,
for the most part.
My personal responsibility doesn't allow me to go quite up to 10. I get to like 7 or so, but.
Yeah, well, my personal checkbook bank account doesn't allow me to go much over 5. So I'm with you on that. And I'm also with you, the cell phones are incredibly distracting. I mean, mm-hmm. I sell wireless devices, cell phones, laptop, air cards, which you actually could be on the internet, on your computer, in your car for a living. And I agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know I've literally just had to put the phone down at times. I said, you know, I'm merging lanes. I don't merge lanes.
Right.
You know, it's part of my driving routine, but I've also consciously incorporated it just as if I were to be on a road trip and stop and get some food and eat on the road as well.
Uh-huh.
But then again, there's people that you see, you know, smoking a cigarette, stuffing a filet of fish sandwich in their mouth, and, you know, adjusting the radio at once, and maybe don't even own a cell phone, that are going to be a threat as well. So, I mean, I definitely see why cell phones are getting fingered, because they're more prevalent. I think probably more people have cell phones and smoke cigarettes, or
that's definitely true nowadays.
The addiction level's about the same, I would say.
The addiction level's about the same that you did that.
I agree with you on that. I have 5 cell phones myself, and I'm looking for a Betty Ford
cell phone
for
anonymous. Cell phone anonymous.
Yes.
Graham, you wanted to comment on something the caller said.
Yes, many of the callers have talked about the notion of personal responsibility, and the notion and the anticipation that somehow a cell phone ban would intrude on some constitutional rights, and that they're different from everybody else. The research shows that the folks that drive on cell phones appreciate that other people are distracted, but they're not distracted. And this personal responsibility argument could be extended to things like drunk driving. I mean, you should be personally responsible. If I can drink and drive, I should be allowed to. It could certainly be extended to the notion of seat belts, the idea that somehow we're personally responsible, so therefore if we choose to put them on, we can't. And it can also be extended even further, I think, to the notion of whether or not the city council has the right to ban secondhand smoke in restaurants. There are just some things, in my judgment, that we can't leave to the individual discretions of all of us around. Dave was mentioning that there's a general community commitment we have to make that allows us to save ourselves from ourselves. So the notion that you can get a ticket for having a seatbelt, it's an irritation, but it makes a little sense to me. And I would make the case that we have the same obligation to ensure the safety of the individuals in the city by banning cell phones.
So let me ask you, before we go back to the phone line, what is your suggestion? How do people get involved? What could they do?
Okay, the basic suggestion is as follows. Consider for a moment that you knew that the next person injured on because someone was on a cell phone was somebody that you knew, or a family member, somebody close to you. You would do everything you could to prevent that. So I ask you to do the following. One, find out who your state representative is and ask them if they would be willing, depending upon your point of view on this issue, to adopt legislation that rescinds the current state law that makes it illegal for the city of Portland to mandate a cell phone ban. So get involved. I believe one of the sponsors of the existing law was Charlie Ringo. So those of you who are in District 7, which is the district I'm in, I'd ask you to send him an email. And his email address is sen.charlieringo@state.or.us. That's sen.charlieringo@state.or.us. Call your local representatives and ask them if they would sponsor a bill to rescind this. This is what I'm going to do. The city council's hands are tied until this law is rescinded. And we got to hurry up here. They, as you know, the state legislature goes into session in 2007.
Right.
It makes me a little nervous that we're going to go through all of 2006 with people behaving the way that many of the callers have mentioned. Secondly, I would ask you to call KATU, Channel 2. They're the only station in town that have made an issue of this. They've covered every possible occasion when there has been an accident and a cell phone has been involved. They've been, in my opinion, doing an admirable civic job of alerting the Portland community. We're all the same community. We're all looking out for each other, or we ought to be. And we need to give the city council the authority that they need to have to protect us, in some cases, from ourselves.
Excellent. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Boy, we're getting minus 1 minute. This has been a very informative hour. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. How are you?
Wonderful. How about you?
Hey, I'm doing good.
Excellent.
I'm in my F-350 here on my cell phone, but I'm not driving.
Well, that's the important thing.
It's up on blocks,
well,
right?
I'm starting to drive now. Hey, listen, you know what? This is what I think. Money makes the world go round. And when people are on their cell phone, they get in an accident, they got to get a tow truck, they got, you know, they get their car banged up, they got to take it to the auto body shop, get it repaired. You know, it's just everybody's winning here because everybody's making money, and so that's what my opinion is on the whole thing.
Your opinion is this about money?
Yeah, you know, that's what makes the world go round. So, you know, as long as they're not hurt, you know, everybody wins.
Well, but I mean, I think what I hope what this program has shown today is that people have been gravely injured by their own stupidity as it relates to a cell phone. I hope that's what we've been able to prove to the listening audience. I've got some technical problems here, Richard. I sound like I'm in a tunnel. Okay, the tunnel has disappeared.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm not sure what that last caller was implying that, well, I mean, let's see, the cell phone industry makes money. They make money off of people having monthly bills that they have to pay. But I think that there's also a greater community good to try to balance personal responsibility and people's personal freedom to talk where they want to. You made an excellent point earlier, Graham, when you talked about this whole idea of people actually knowing what appropriate personal boundaries are has changed radically in the last few years. You know, there used to be a time that, you know, people would not actually be having a full-out conversation in a movie theater on their cell phone, even though nowadays every movie theater says at the beginning, please turn your pagers and cell phones off. There's always somebody who just has to take that phone call in the movie theater. So I'm not quite sure what that caller wanted to say, but I'm going to go back. We've got a few more callers. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
Hi.
That last caller, to me, just kind of proved what so many of the callers are doing this morning, and that is that they're coming from a very car-centric point of view.
Mm.
So they don't realize that there are people out there like myself who get around the city by bicycle, and if your car hits me because you were distracted for any reason, I'm possibly dead,
right?
And or maimed for life or something.
Right.
So, like one caller earlier said, well, why don't we just make them have $100 extra fine for
right.
that?
Yeah.
Well, that does me a lot of good. So it's just that point of view that has me riled up. I see so many people, you know, that I have to make really defensive moves on because they're on their cell phone. I have to basically say, you know, watch out for my life. And it's a really scary thing. And for people who don't think cell phones are more distracted than the radio or whatnot, I totally disagree. Because when you get on when I'm on a phone, I have a hard time concentrating on anything else because I'm thinking about the conversation. Maybe I'm having a heated argument with somebody. Maybe I don't do that, but maybe I'm talking to my girlfriend and I'm really dreamy. Maybe I'm like talking about work. But either way, there's a lot of cognitive thought processes that are going on that you don't normally have.
Right.
That music doesn't cause you to have. And so you can't really make the decisions that you need to make necessarily when you're driving. And if you have somebody else in the car and you're having those conversations with, they're an extra pair of eyes. I was just coming back from Mount Hood this weekend and we were having a discussion and the driver was distracted, but I was there and I saw that, hey, you need to stop, and I called out, you need to stop. But if I was on the other end of a phone, I could not see that.
Mm-hmm. I do that to my husband all the time. It's a very good point. Yeah, it's like I'm a good sightseeing driver. wait.
Yeah.
But thank you. I think you've raised some really good points, and I think that, I mean, people don't want to question their own behavior is really the bottom line. I mean, I think we can all point to behavior that other people are exhibiting and be able to point out what's wrong with that behavior. But then when you try to make it personal, what you realize is, you know, as Graham said in the beginning, people say, well, I do fine. But it's those other fools on their cell phones that we've got to fix.
Well, I don't think the numbers are probably comparable. I will have to say, in terms of the caller's remark about cell phones being car-centric, my office over on 28th and Stark has a lot of bicycle traffic.
Uh-huh.
I am seeing a growing number of people riding down the street on their bikes, steering with one hand.
Talking on a cell.
Talking on a cell on the, with the other hand. And I've seen a few of them take spills as a result of that. So it's spreading beyond the four-wheel vehicles. One thing, though, I was hoping Graham might be able to comment on, especially as we're talking about, you know, money being a factor here. Whether you love them or hate them, insurance companies do have a tremendous impact on things like this. And are they picking up on this issue of cell phones being a cause of more accidents and therefore making perhaps premiums reflect that sort of thing?
Yes. Insurance Institute, for example, has been collecting data and has published it. You can get it on the web as well on what they've found out. As I might have mentioned earlier, the second question asked by the United Services Automobile Association, which is the insurance company that I have, if you're involved in an accident, fender bender, whatever, was either party on a cell phone. So the insurance industry is collecting information about it. From a civic standpoint, one could make a prediction, I think, that if the city of Portland were to ban cell phones, they should be able to command a lower insurance rate from their insurers,
right,
that are insuring the fire departments and the police departments. I mean, take for a moment, just remember that woman who drove off the Morrison Bridge into the water, she had to be saved.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, and there was an article about the fireman who saved her in the Oregonian, mm-hmm, I think, last week. These are all risky behaviors that we're imposing upon the fire department, which they carry insurance for. One can make a case that the actuarially the risks of Portland with a ban on cell phones would lower their insurance costs. Mm-hmm. And insurance companies are looking at that. Somebody mentioned, you know, maybe charging a surcharge for getting picked up on a ticket. But you could also make an argument that the insurance companies should be charging folks who have cell phones in their cars more insurance than folks who don't have it.
I get a discount.
Like smoking, for
example. I was
going
to say, I get a discount because I don't smoke.
Absolutely. And it should apply here because the dangers are, you know, you can make the case they're comparable.
Okay, back to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO. Could you be short, sweet, to the point, please? We're running out of time.
No problem.
Thank you.
Can't stand cell phones. Both my wife and I work retail, and people get on the phone. I would say 80% of the people you deal with are on the phone while you're trying to do a transaction.
That is so rude.
It's horribly rude, and it slows down everything for everyone involved. Also, what I do if I'm in traffic, I don't have a cell phone, and someone's behind me and they want to pass me and they're really angry and I'm doing the speed limit, I put my left hand up to my head like I'm on a cell phone, so when they do pass me, they think I'm another one of them. Give it a shot. It's cheap. It's easy.
Your sense of humor. Thank you very much.
Right, take care. Thank you.
Have a great day. It's been interesting. Good morning, caller. You get to be the last one. Please be short, sweet, and to the point.
Okay. I haven't had a car in 20 years. I'm a cyclist and a pedestrian, and every single time I have had a close call, it's because someone's on their cell phone. They're looking right and not left.
Mm-hmm.
They're turning. They don't see me in the crosswalk. Even in the crosswalk, when I have the walk sign, that should be when I can cross without even having to worry about anything.
Right.
It is always people on their cell phone. It doesn't matter what gender they are. It doesn't matter what age they are. It's the phone.
Thank you. You have been eloquent, short, sweet, and concise, and I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Well, we're coming down to the final minutes. It looks like I've got another caller. Let me see if this one could be short, sweet, and to the point as well. Hello? We lost him. A technical glitch? So be it. So, Graham, you get the opportunity to have the last word. What is the word you'd like to leave our listening audience with?
Well, my opinion is that in the city of Portland and the state of Oregon, one death, one injury is too many. If it's associated with a cell phone, this is behavior that we can avoid, and we have an obligation as a community with respect for ourselves and our safety to do just that. I will end with a statistic. The Harvard School of Public Policy in 2003 published a report that said the following. In 2003, there were approximately 2,600 deaths, 330,000 moderate to critical injuries, and 1.5 million instances of property damage in America attributable to cell phone use while driving. I would just as soon none of those be in the state of Oregon. I can't speak for the other states that are trying to pass legislation, but I would strongly encourage the community to back legislation such that the City Council Portland at least can protect us all from the cell phone drivers that don't have a clue as to whether or not to turn left or right and who hesitate at stop sign, hesitate at green lights, and run over people on crosswalks.
Thank you, thank you. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show today, Graham Covington. I love that name. I think that that's a CEO name. Graham Covington. It should be an author. You should be an author. That's one of those strong titles. I also want to remind people that the Gulf War 15 years later is a rally and march against the continuing war in Iraq will be held next Friday, January 13th, from 5 to 6 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square on Southwest Broadway and Yamhill. You may know that this rally has taken place every single week, every Friday, since November of 2001. There will be speakers, chants, and we're in Oregon, so make sure you dress for the weather. If you want more information, you feel free to call the co-sponsoring groups Peace and Justice Works, Iraqi Affinity Group at 503-236-3065, or Portland Peaceful Response Coalition at 503-344-5078. Dave Mazza, it has been a pleasure to have you here as my co-host today.
Thank you, Joanne. It's always a pleasure working with you.
It's been a blast. It's been a certain blast, and we're going to do it again later this month.
Mm-hmm.
And for listening audience members who are wondering, like, what's going on there, as you know, my fearless co-host left the state yesterday, headed to Tennessee, where he's going to be living on a farm again in a nice, quiet, mellow life. And I am having various co-hosts come through over the next couple of months, looking for the right fit so that the Voices from the Edge will continue on and will continue to be what you have come to expect. So stay tuned. See you next week, same time, same place. This has been Joanne Bowman and Voices from the Edge.
On Friday, January 6th, for a discussion of Tom Hartman's 10 Steps to Restore Democracy to America, and What do we need to do for the coming year? If you like to engage in talk radio, we're inviting your calls this Friday at 6 p.m. as we examine and comment on Hartman's A Declaration of Rights for the 21st Century. That's on Bread and Roses this Friday at 6 p.m.
Bread and Roses, as we come marching, we march to for men.